The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union helps you take control of your finances after the holidays. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Never quit. Team never quit. Team never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. How's everybody doing today?
I'm having an awesome day. How's yours?
It's good, man. Had some Mexican food for lunch down in Magnolia.
Tell me about it.
So I did the Tex-Mex combo, tamale, enchilada, and chicken fajita. And dude, so good.
What was the name of it?
Tex-Mex combo. What was that place called?
No,
Rancho Grande.
Rancho Grande?
Rancho.
There you go.
Hey, we got a great Patreon question for the day. Have you ever dined and dashed at a restaurant?
Oh, dude. Straight on the call out. Have you?
You're asking me if I ever broke the law, right?
Yes, straight out of the bat, man, huh?
Yeah. I'm not proud of it. I think it happened a time or two. Young kids, dumb, and just, you know, did it. Didn't think of the consequences.
Sure.
But yeah, been there.
All right, I'm going to always err on the side of that I did it, even if I don't really remember. Sometimes I was in dining, and then we had to run the hell out of there because of whatever fight ensued or whatever happened. So technically,
yeah,
you know, I think we might be safe on this one.
Yeah. If you don't remember it, did it really count? I don't know.
But yes, you know, as younger lings.
Younger lings. Hey, that's a great Patreon question today. Thanks for throwing us under the bus with that one. Yeah, I think so. I think it's great because they really get to know you.
Yeah, well, we're doing that.
They're doing that now. Hey, if you guys want to check us out on Patreon, it's patreon.com/teamneverquit. We've got some exclusive access, behind the scenes merch, a challenge coin, all kind of other cool stuff. But we've got
I got it. All right. The best one that we ever pulled off was in Vegas because we didn't have, my buddy got married when we were still in college, like 20 something years old, and I didn't have enough money for the plane ticket or anything like that. So somebody paid for me to get out there. Then we all stayed, must have been 20 of us, and we split one hotel room. So you can imagine, we weren't planning on sleeping. So we didn't have enough money to drink. So we would go into every casino and sit down and act like we were playing slots.
Yeah.
And then when the waitress would walk up, yeah, you know, get free drinks.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. And then we'd order some other stuff up as well. And then as soon as she brought it over and drop it off, then we'd be like, hey, our buddy just showed up. Can you bring him some stuff? And when she left, then we'd haul ass. So, yeah. And me and my partner, we robbed every casino in Vegas.
Oh, God.
Of some alcohol.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the best one I got.
That's good. That's all real right. Good. It is out in the world now. You ready for that?
Yeah. That was kind of like gangster.
That was very gangster of you. Hey, guys, we've got a great guest in store today. Matt Frazier is a retired Canadian-American professional CrossFit athlete competing from 2014 to 2020. Frazier is the first athlete to have won 5 CrossFit Games titles consecutively. He's widely considered to be the most dominant ever male athlete in the sport of CrossFit. Matt has a background in Olympic weightlifting and was a junior national champion. Matt, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been a long time in the making.
Where are you at right now?
We are, we're in Salt Lake City right now. We're posted up here for like two and a half weeks, but we got like, I think we're just over a month on the road. We got like 3 or 4 stops, but Salt Lake was the place where like, all right, we're just going to get a house. And like, that's where all our people are coming in to do a bunch of work, have some fun. But yeah, just a fun place. I always enjoy my time here.
All right. So you're not in the grind, or you kind of are in the grind? What about the holidays? Did you do anything cool?
Thanksgiving, you know, Thanksgiving is Sammy's family. That's like their holiday. So it's like always go down to her family, big, you know, just a whole day with the family, lots of food, but mostly just hanging out.
Yep.
And I think this year we are going to get home for Christmas. But it's like we get home like a couple days prior. So it's just going to be Sam and I for a couple days.
Y'all normally do a big family thing? We do for Thanksgiving, man. Christmas, we're kind of hashing that out as well. Melly and I are talking what we're going to do because I think we're going down to the grandparents in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So we're kind of hashing that out right now.
Thanksgiving on my side of the family, it was never a big thing because both my parents are Canadian. So like Canadians have a different Thanksgiving. And so, you know, my dad would go up to see his family, but my brother and I were still in school. So we would stay home and not celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving. Then American Thanksgiving would come around. We would just kind of load up, go to camp, have some time up there. But Sammy's family, you know, it's the holiday, you know, it's not really materialized. It's all about just spending time together and just sharing a plate. So that's like their Super Bowl.
Man, dude, if I was lucky enough to have any Canadians in my family, I would celebrate every one of those holidays.
Yeah, I know, right?
If it was split down like that, if I had one of those, I'd be like, I'll be there. Hell yeah, we're partying.
Growing up, it was like you're in school. And so it just wasn't that big of a thing. And then Christmas is always super low key for Sam and I. You know, we don't really do gifts. We don't really do any of that stuff. You know, it's just about like a day together. We have a couple fun traditions, but it's more just like a quiet day at home, just the two of us. You know, always working, always traveling. So it's like any opportunity we have to like have an excuse to just be home and nobody else is working, so we don't get any calls. So it's nice.
Oh, man. Well, here's the deal. When I was still doing all the traveling, especially before the kids came in, when it was just me, you know, when we're alone, that's a thing too. But when you're traveling, when there's two of you still traveling, you can always be on the road. And we were too. And then when the kids come online, all those travels that you went on and all those little customs and traditions that you hear a lot of people having in the family, bro, once I got my kids online, I started so many traditions. I write them down just to throw a lot of them to see which ones stick. Here's another thing. I'm like, hey man, a lot of this has been in our family for a long, long time because some of it has. And then some of it has been in somebody else's family for a long, long time, but the tradition is still important.
Mm-hmm.
And man, we have fun. I Griswold the outside of the house. I mean, light everything up just to have something to do to pass down for the kids. Don't worry about that, man. That comes later, bro. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're no kids so far. So, I mean, it's nice to have the freedom of like, you know, an opportunity comes up and it's just like, yeah, we'll hop on a plane tonight. You know, like there's no accountability to anything like that. So we can, but I think, you know, we're getting to the point where like we value our time at home more. And
oh, well, that's
more
how you know.
More.
That's how you know there's like, a shift.
Yeah. And, you know, it was always something I wanted too. Of like, I never wanted a household that I counted down the days to my vacation. I didn't want to count down the days till I can go to Mexico or go wherever it is for a vacation. But no, I want my home to be a place that I want to be.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it just travels crazy. I bet. Like you can be on the road 300 days a year.
Yeah.
Like that. And so it's like, we're, you know, whenever we do trips, we try to lump them all together. So we piggyback them all and just knock them all out at once. Then we get a good stint at home. But man, it wears on you.
That's why it's good to have somebody to roll with.
I am grateful for that every day. You know, it's just like there's no road trip too long if you have a good, like if you have a fun person in the car.
That's what, yeah, absolutely.
And I've like, I am grateful all the time. And I vocalize it to Sammy every trip around. I'm like, how lucky are we? And you know, like luck had nothing to do with it, but it's like how grateful I want to like voice my gratefulness to her of like, man, we get to do all this shit together. Fuck. Yeah. You know, cause I've been on trips before, like the beautiful landmark, you know, it's supposed to be breathtaking. You're doing it by yourself and you're like, this means nothing.
Right. Man, when you're yourself, it's not that it's not cool and you can't appreciate it, but it's, I think having someone next to you helps you because you also appreciate it from their perspective.
Is that like when you're doing it alone, you're just not sharing it with anyone. Yeah. And it's the same with, I mean, it applies to so many things. So like you can have this, a big, beautiful house and it's like, all right, well, this sucks if you're by yourself. It's just a big empty house. But as soon as you share it with someone, you know, going on trips, going on adventures, going through highs and lows, it's all better with someone. So I'm so grateful that I have someone that, like, A, I love, but then B, I'm friends with.
And
get to just, like, just go on this crazy fucking adventure with. And even if it's a terrible time, we'll laugh about it down the road. You know, it'll just be like kind of a laugh at my misery type of story. But yeah.
The best is when they're reminders that it happened. I mean, they, you know what I'm talking about?
I have the memory of a goldfish. Bro, and so, you know, like
on some of that
Sammy will bring up a memory and I'm like, what are you talking about? And she'll like have to like, you know, that time we were in Brazil, it was when on this excursion, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah. Okay, cool. And, you know, dude, for me, it's like, I have the memory of a goldfish. It goes in one ear, out the other. And it's like, all right, I got someone keeping me in line.
Matt, you got to take us way back though, man. Were you always athletic guy? Like from the childhood?
I would like to think so. You know, I'm maybe if you talk to some of my like sports coaches when I was in third grade, they might have something different to say, but, you know, I don't want to say I was left unsupervised, but I had a father that encouraged me to try things. You know, stay at home dad, and you got a couple trampolines in the backyard, you start doing some reckless shit. But yeah, you know, always involved in sports, you know, whether it was skiing, soccer, football, got into weightlifting at a pretty young age, but, you know, I probably wasn't the most naturally gifted athlete. I always had incredible body coordination and I was always like the strong one in the group. So, you know, basically anything I tried, if I had an interest in it, I could pursue it and do okay. But you know,
explain that part. I mean, cause being good at something, some people, I was talking with somebody the other day about, man, hey, the difference between the greatest fighter ever and the best fighter ever, or the greatest athlete ever and the best athlete ever. And some people are like, there's no difference. I'm like, well, yeah, man, there kind of is, right? There's a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've had it, you know, from the two sports that I took seriously. You know, I competed in Olympic style weightlifting for, you know, about 10 years. And then obviously I had my career in CrossFit. In both of those, you know, I never looked at it like as if I'm like the most naturally gifted, you know, not at all. Like my first day in both of those sports, my first couple of years in both of those sports, like people were whooping on me. But it was, you know, once I decided like, okay, I enjoy this, and it's not just the instant gratification of I'm good at this and I'm getting pats on the back, but like there's something about it that clicks and I enjoy it. If I'm going to pursue it, I have the physical and mental capabilities to, you know, tap my full potential. So, you know, like with weightlifting, you know, I walked into the weight room that I started Olympic lifting in when I think I was about 12. And, you know, there are other kids my age, my weight that were outlifting me, that were catching on to the technique, you know, more naturally. You know, they needed less and less coaching cues. But like, well, once I decided, oh, I like this, well, I'm going to work my ass off. You know, this is something that I want. So I'm going to make sure that I get it. And same thing with CrossFit. You know, when I first, my first day in a CrossFit gym, I remember getting dusted by this dude. You know, he had to be early to mid 50s, a little bit overweight. And when it came to the running portion of the workout, he just like cooked by me. And so it's like, I was good at some things, but I was terrible at others. But it, you know, once like I went to a competition and I think I took fifth place, and I was like, all right, I don't like that. And so the day I made the decision, like, okay, I want to be good at this, it was like, okay, I'm going to learn what I don't know and then fucking hammer it until I'm great at it.
Let me ask you this. When you first get into something, whether it's the CrossFit or the lifting or just, I guess, life itself, because eventually you turn into it. But were you the type that when you went into the gym, did you go into so you could lift heavier weights, or did the guys that were in there lifting heavier, are they the ones that drove that for you to lift heavy? Like, was it a competition between yourself or the other people or both? Because I look at some of the things that I do and I'm like, man, the only reason I do that and get good at it is so I can do it with my boy, you know, with the guys and in the team environment. And then there's the things that you get proficient at that are different. Like, you love it. It's like the more you do it, the more you want to do it.
Yeah. You know, I've always counted myself very, very blessed in the fact that, like, I think I have both of those.
Yeah.
So a little bit of background. Both my parents were competitive figure skaters. Pairs freestyle figure skaters.
That's right. I remember you telling me that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So they went to the 76 Olympics, and, you know, so incredibly athletic, incredibly gifted, and they worked their ass off. But my mom was more along the lines of, like, work when nobody's looking. Like, she's doing it. She loves a hard day's work. And she's great at it. She dedicates herself to it, and she wants to be the best. And so that was like the work in silence and then kind of appear in the public eye, do your thing, and then kind of go back. And then my dad was like polar opposite. My dad hated training, but he was a performer. When he had another set of eyes on him, he loved to perform. When he had a resentment against another competitor or something like that, he was like, oh, okay, like, I'm going to beat you. That's going to be my success. And I can't believe I forgot about that, man. The best of both worlds. And
yeah, so, yeah. You know,
I love, like, when I have a home gym and, like, I would go in and I'm like, all right, this is the ideal situation because I don't have to share equipment with anyone. I don't have to wait on a training partner. I don't have to do what the coach is saying. I can do exactly what I know I need to be doing. I can be on my own schedule. I have all access to everything I need. But then also when I go into the gym or in a competition and there's other eyes on me, now I get to race someone else. Now I get to show off a little bit. I get to show off what I've built in silence, in the darkness.
Yeah.
And, like, bring it out. So I genuinely love both scenarios.
I tell you what, man, coming up, I was the same way. I like to get proficient at something, but before you go out and you try and tackle it in the public. And then there's people who react better trying to learn something.
I know, exactly. When there's people over your shoulder, it's like, yo,
it's impossible. Like, that's impossible, right?
Yeah. I had that a lot through my career of, like, you know, anytime there was something I wasn't proficient in or as a weakness, I would seek out a professional or seek out advice of, like, show me how to do this. And a lot of the times, you know, that you have a group, you have to travel or they have to travel, all this stuff. And I would have the person show me, or I would, like, you know, read a book or, you know, watch YouTube videos to try to learn how to do this skill. And then, like, the first time I'm putting my hands on it, I would literally be like, okay, like, everyone go away. Like, go away for an hour, or I'll go away for an hour. Let me practice this a little bit on my own. So I'm taking out the variable of other people's judgment or, like, other people's critiques, because I want to learn by having my hands on.
Yeah.
And so I remember, like, there's one event from 1 year competition. So it was the second time I took second place at the CrossFit Games. And there was one piece of equipment. It was called the pig. And it was just like it was basically like a solid refrigerator. It was like 500-600 pounds, and you just had to flip it end over end, and it bundled me. I couldn't figure out the technique, did terrible in the event, and it essentially cost me the competition. But anyways, right after the competition, I was like, I'm going to get that piece of equipment. I'm going to become amazing at it. So next time it comes up, I'm prepared.
Right.
And this thing gets delivered. And it's like, it's in a busy gym, you know, there's 40, 50 people around at all times. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to practice this in front of everyone. Cause then you're going to get all the critiques from other people that also have no idea what they're doing. It's the pride. It's the ego of, like, I don't want to look vulnerable in front of other people. So it's like, I remember going in, like, every Sunday night, gym would be closed. I would go in, flick on, like, the one light in the back room, and just flip it over and over and over. And it was just like, I was by myself, like, no one there to pat me on the ass, no one there to criticize me. I was like, no, I want to be alone with my thoughts and figure this thing out. And that's how I like to tackle a lot of things, of, like, if I need help, I'll go searching for it. But when I'm trying to figure it out for the first time, I just need some time by myself.
Yeah, it's almost as trying to figure yourself into whatever it is, not the other way around. I do it that way as well, which is kind of crazy because once we got into the teams, everything we do is from the ground up. Like we learn how to move and shoot and do everything together. But before you, before we did that, we obviously had to be individually trained for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, doing things as a team and doing things individually are two completely
different. That's completely different.
Yeah. I've always stayed on the individual side. Cause you know, I'm willing to bet like in your scenario, that's one of the rare scenarios where you're around as like-minded people as yourself. Like they probably don't make the cut if they're not.
Right. So the way that's funny you should bring that up because just the other day, I think about that. People ask me that question and it's almost as if they throw us into a scenario. Take one guy from each walk of life, like the thing's completely different in everything and put us into a scenario where we want to be in there, but we're getting our asses kicked so bad. And this is the craziest part. So you'll be laying there going through something like, man, I'm suffering. This is terrible. What's up? And you'll roll over and look at your buddy and you can tell he's just not having a good time, right? He's just miserable as shit. And that somehow, some way fires you up. All right. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, man, I just want to be here for this guy so I can watch him because he makes me laugh. But then he's willing to sit here beside me and go through this crap together.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then, so what happens is our egos clash together and then be like, just kind of leave. And then you got what's left. So yeah. We learn how to operate inside that kind of that realm. It doesn't matter how alpha the male, the apex predators, man. Once we became a pack, like when we packed up and we started moving together. Well, I mean, y'all see the results now.
Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of unstoppable. So the train, we talked about this, man. We do the same, the CrossFit and all that stuff. All the guys are huge into that. I mean, we have guys who just study physics all day, and then we got guys in your world too. So. that is a difference. They can clash, but moreover, not.
Let's take a second to
I've always steered toward individual sports because it's like, if your outcome is determined by one person that isn't as dedicated as you, or doesn't care as much as you, it fucks up everyone's effort. It doesn't matter how hard you try. If that guy's not holding up his responsibility, it's wasted, you know? Yeah. I mean, I've always just looked at what you guys did and was like, wow, that's incredible that there's that many like-minded people that come together.
Yeah. Oh, trust me, it's there for a reason. It took a while to build that program. We compliment all the time, like, man, how in the heck did that create that? And like, man, you know, there's a lot. We kind of had an idea.
It worked out somehow.
Yeah, right. You can put it together, and the concept came together, but what it produces is something completely different. Like the program that the CrossFit. I mean. It started out as one thing. I'm sure now it means something completely different to you, right? I mean, the way you think, the way you move, just doing, being at that level of athletic performance all the time, the people that you're all around all the time. I mean, just all the stuff coming out of your mouth is motivational.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, yes. In some ways, no. You know, like there are some things that I learned along the way, but like, you know, the competitive drive, the mentality, the dedication, things that kind of are more life traits. I kind of already had those because I already, like, before I got into CrossFit, I already had a sports career that, you know, just knocked me on my ass. And like, I didn't have a choice. I was either roll over and die or get up and, you know, keep doing it. So, you know, I already learned some incredibly valuable life lessons prior to getting in CrossFit. And so, you know, CrossFit was just kind of a bonus. I thought my sports career was over and done with. And then like after a year of doing nothing, started kind of dabbling with CrossFit. And then I was in school full time and you know, was just doing it, just kind of, you know, I gained a bit of weight after I retired from weightlifting, and, you know, just had a tough time meeting people at school. And so it's just like, all right, this is my outlet. This is where, you know, I'm going to shed off a bit of this weight. I get to meet some like-minded people. And then the whole competition thing kind of happened. I don't want to say by mistake, but, you know, the gym owner saw the potential in me and wanted me to compete in a competition. And I was like, I don't have the money for the sign-up fee. And so he's like, all right, I'll sign you up. But if you win, you have to buy some CrossFit shoes. And I was like, okay, cool, deal. And then I won, and it was, you know, it was a couple $100. And I went like, holy shit.
Like, did you win, or did you like did dominate the whole program?
I think it was only a 1 day event, and I'm pretty sure I had the competition won before the final event. So I went into the final, like the last event of the day, already having it wrapped up. But it definitely wasn't like a domination, right? You know, because it was like, I was so new, you know, like I didn't have a set of lungs on me to save my life. I was strong as hell, but that's about where it ended. And, but you know, it was after that once I was like, oh man, I can make some pocket money while I'm in school. Okay. Like, and so I started like looking up other competitions that, and if there was like $1,000 on the line, I was there. And I looked at it, like a part-time job of like, all right, if I want to perform better at work, I need to get better at rowing. I need to get better at biking. I need to get better at weight, like whatever it was. And it was all with the intent of like going to that competition and performing better so that I could like have some pocket money.
Yeah. So the difference between when you guys step in there for the competition as when you're in the gym working out, I mean, you guys press yourself just as hard. Is there a, what's that like?
Yeah. You know, when it comes to training, you know, it, you have to look at it over the long haul. It wasn't, if I trained every day the way I competed, you know, I would have broken 4 years ago. So, you know, it's training absolute max effort today, which still allows me to train tomorrow and the next day, you know? So I always trained in like usually about three day intervals. And then it depends on what time in the season, you know, I was one of the few athletes that actually took an off season. You know, I would take a full month off after competition, and you're physically recovered, you know, after, you know, 5 days a week, maybe. But then it's just a mental break after that, you know, it's stepping away from, you know, the physical demands. But like the mental stress of like, oh fuck, I have to do rowing intervals today. And basically like, you know, your cardio session was you can put your stamp on it. Once you're gasping for air, you're tasting pennies. You feel like your lungs are bleeding. And it's like, okay, I did everything I could today. Like I'll come back tomorrow and do it again.
So just to explain CrossFit a little bit better, because when you watch the CrossFit games, I guess, I mean, it's almost like watching the best in the world work out at the same time in y'all's gym.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a huge difference. When people watch that, it gets terrifying. I mean, just to even think about getting in CrossFit, your normal person to be terrified to walk into the gym. To get in there and work out is actually a good time. I mean, when we explain it like this, and we're talking about the games, like, man, this sucks, and the rowing, kicks your ass. I'm like, man, a normal CrossFit gym member to go in there, it's a good time. I mean, it's a good workout.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it for years, you know, like I've had friends that oh, I love watching the movie that comes out every year. I love watching the competition. I could never do that though. And it's like, all right, but like what I do and what CrossFit is are two completely different things. Like the sport of CrossFit, like you go into a CrossFit gym and it's like a 1 hour start to finish, infinitely scalable. Like it's no matter what your fitness is or what your, you know, limiting factors are, there's something there for you. You know, like my mom is 66. And she goes to CrossFit every morning, like every morning. And then, you know, you got me who I'm like, okay, that 1 hour, that's not what I'm training for. I'm not training for, to be fitter for life. I'm training to compete
in a game. Right?
And so it's like, I'm not leaving any stone unturned. So, you know, anything and everything that can show up in competition, you know, there's the typical things, you know, there's the conditioning, the weightlifting, gymnastics, but then you're getting into these even more specific skills of A, combining all these different things, Training anything from a 10-second workout to a 3-hour workout, which we've done and seen both. But then also like the stuff like having to practice biathlon shooting, having to practice getting in a rowboat, you know, road bike, like all these specialty things. It's like, yeah, a regular CrossFit gym, you're not going to be going to the lake to get and learn how to scull. But it's like, it might show up for me. So I got to practice.
Yeah, right. It's called like a universal soldier program you guys are starting up there.
I guess.
You know what I mean? Every time I hear there's something new added to it, and there is. There's a huge difference. It's like watching professional basketball and watching those guys and being scared to go play on a court just because you might run into them. I mean, that's not the case, right?
You know, it's like, you know, I'm not watching like a UFC fight and going like, oh man, I can never try BJJ because like I'm going to get my ass kicked by one of those guys. It's like, no, absolutely not. Like I'm going to start out at an introductory level and then build up as high as I want to go, you know? So it's like, yeah, you know, they're two separate things. We're just doing the one to the absolute extreme where it's a full-time job day in, day out. And then the other version is 1 hour from walking in the door to walking out, 1 hour and you're done.
Sure. Helmet. I would break it down for some of the people when they come in. I'm like, hey, just showing up for a few minutes and looking in there. Just, it's a routine. It's a pattern. If you can't do something, or if you don't think you're proficient at it, start with the basics. When I would try to heal myself, I was like, hey, man, let's do one push-up. If just every morning you get down to one push-up, eventually you'll start doing two. Mm-hmm. But you can can do one. And it literally starts like that. Just and the guys, like with you and the guys, the program that I went with on the opposite side, that the team up guys, that part's the same. It's like even when we get beat down, and at the top of your game, man, when you're crushing, I mean, you're setting the standards, right? So every time you guys do a new competition, that means they got to come at you with something new. Mm-hmm. That's like the Nitro boys. Every time, I think the biggest mistake the Nitro boys made was they put it on video because you can watch it over and over. So everyone's be like, hey, what do you got next? What do you? Let me see something else, man.
Exactly, right?
What do you got? I mean, and y'all are testing that. Yeah, we just keep pushing.
It's the same in every sport. You know, it's like when the first person, like they said, the 4-minute mile was impossible. And then as soon as one person did it, like people were trying to achieve it for years and no one could do it until one person did it. And I
40,000.
Don't quote me on this, but in that year, 24, 26 people then did it.
No. Look that up. And it's more than that, bro. I know exactly what you're talking about. And that's a great point to make. Everyone had set the standard. And then that, as soon as that guy got that done, as soon as he broke through that line, I mean, some crazy number.
Yeah.
Broke it.
And then like, I remember like growing up, like my parents were figure skaters and it was like, everyone said like the quad was impossible. It's impossible. And then Elvis Stoiko, boom, lands the first quad in competition. And now it's a standard. And you know, it's no different. It's like in every other sport. And
I can't believe we didn't name our boat Blades of Glory, by the way.
I know, right?
Dude, why? How did we miss that one? Whatever we're doing next.
The Flying Lotus, man. That's impossible.
That is.
It was over 1,400, by the way.
Yeah, okay, 1,400. Yeah, excuse me.
1,500?
1,400 people, yeah.
Was that year or
since? I don't know about that year. Since then, 1,400.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, I want to say it was like 20 or 24 or 26.
I know that's like 40,000. I was wrong. But,
like when I came into CrossFit, it was, you know, if you snatched two blues. So if you had two blue plates, 225 pounds, if you could snatch that, you were a heavy hitter. If you could clean and jerk 315, you're a heavy hitter. You know, like
just one time, right?
Like that. What's that?
Just doing it one time.
Yeah, just one rep. And
what's it at now?
And I mean, I remember a couple years ago, it comes down to like, you know, when the events get programmed into competition. So sometimes we won't see a similar event for, you know, a year or two.
Oh, yeah, check.
But I remember last time there was like a one rep max snatch. I think there were three or four guys that were taking that made or attempted over a 300 pound snatch. Like early in my career, I snatched 315, But like then like the standard, like a couple guys start hitting a 405 clean. And then as soon as one does it, it's like boop, 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 there's five more magically just hit it. You know, there's markers like that in every sport in CrossFit. It's like there are endless variations of benchmarks to chase. You know, it's like, it's not like Olympic weightlifting where there's a snatch and clean and jerk, and then you combine those, you get a total. Where like track and field, it's like you maybe run a couple different events, but usually like if you're a 1500 meter specialist or 100 meter specialist, that's all you do.
Yeah.
In CrossFit, it is that there are endless benchmarks. And so it's kind of rewarding in a way of like, you can always progress in something else. There's so many different things to be hitting. At the end of the day though, like it can be frustrating too. If you're like,
dude, the nation, everyone's coming for you, man. Everyone's coming after your job, right? If you're sitting on the top like that in the CrossFit nation. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, yes. In other ways, like you win it one season, the next season starts a couple months later. Like the games, I think, usually ended like early August. And then the start of the next season starts usually February. And you go into that next season with a clean slate. You have to sign up the same as everyone else. You don't get a bye.
That's never changed. They'll keep it like that. Yeah, you got to keep going through, right?
I don't think there's any signs of it changing. I don't think there's any signs of it.
Yeah, probably wouldn't. That's probably one of the best things. If it started in there like that, it'll probably stay like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's always been debate on, like, all right, if you won the games, or if you're top five the year prior, you know, should you get a pass in? Because it ends up being a long season.
Sure.
You know, I've had it where it's like you take a month off and then you're right back into it. And then, you know, if you have to hit other competitions throughout the season to qualify or whatever, they change it every year of how you qualify. But yeah, there's always debate going back and forth. I don't think there's any sign of it changing. I think it doesn't matter if you
want. Well, man, you know what that also does.
You're starting from the same point as everyone else.
Yeah. But when you stayed at the spot you did for as long as you did, that sets a hard standard, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when you're still here whipping everybody's ass. That's a big deal. That was man, when, being it set yeah. up like that, that's what that produces. So there won't be any question.
Yeah.
Like later down the road, there won't be any question who in the hell was the top dog back then. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Many people might not know this about you, but when you were younger, around 10, I think, you struggled with some stuff that could have kind of gotten you in your own way. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like I always talk about, you know, like it's very easy to just paint it with a broad brush of like, you know, I was young and dumb. And I think it all comes down to, you know, your own experience of one person's interpretation of young and dumb might be a little bit different than others. And, you know, I thought my childhood, I thought my teen years were very normal because for the little network that I was in, they were pretty normal. But just in terms of
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Vermont, but it was just, you know, like kind of what we were exposed to. And there's a couple like circumstances that, you know, introduced us to drugs and alcohol at an incredibly young age. You know, I thought I was, you know, I thought it was normal, you know, cause I was with friends and they were all doing the same shit I was doing, but it was actually kind of funny. It was a couple years ago, one of my best friends, you know, his daughter came in and he's like, oh, you know, she's going into fourth grade, starting fourth grade tomorrow. I was like, oh, you concerned about drugs? Like he had those talks with her and he was like, what? Absolutely not. Why would I do that? I'm like, oh, it's when I started experimenting with drugs. And he's like, dude, she still colors in the coloring book. Why would she be worried about that? Or why should I be worried? I was like, well, I didn't realize. So, you know, like, it was just, you know, alcoholism runs in my family. And, you know, it didn't skip me. So, you know, I partook and, you know, I took a couple of licks, got in some trouble. And it's one of those things that, like, okay, not every time I drank, I got in trouble, but every time I got in trouble, I had been drinking. And
touche. Touche.
So, you know, it was just one of those things. Like, it was all dumb stuff, like just bonehead things I got in trouble with. And, you know, I had been scouted by the coach out of the Olympic Training Center. You know, I competed in Olympic weightlifting. I had an offer to go out to the Olympic Training Center to live there, train there, go to school there. And, you know, just got arrested one too many times and just all for dumb shit. And, you know, I think I was 17, and I finally had a moment where I was like, what am I risking this golden opportunity for? Like, you can't train at a better place. You can't have better resources. And like, and then add on top of it, like, you know, the facility, the paid, like a scholarship for school, all this stuff. And I was like, I'm risking it all just to fuck around with my friends and over stuff that doesn't matter. And you know, the writing was on the wall. You know, alcoholism runs in my family. And, you know, I had the resources right there to clean up my act. I had the network of friends that I could kind of let go of this network of friends and start hanging out with this one more and more. You know, like my dad always encouraged me to like just hang out with sober people. You know, he had a whole sober network of friends, some that were closer to my age, and he always pushed me to hang out with Nate. And he was a super fun guy. And, you know, I never even really connected the dots of why my dad wanted me to hang out with this guy. Like, when you're 14 and your dad's telling you, hey, go hang out with this guy that's 21 or 23. And I'm like, that's weird, but it's cool. Like, this guy has his own car and all this stuff. And once I was a bit older, I pieced the dots together and realized, like, oh, my dad knew Nate from being sober. And he knew that if I was with Nate, I wouldn't be drinking or drugging. So, you know, the transition for me of, you know, just going from like a little hooligan to, you know, just being sober and actually kind of taking care of my own shit, it was pretty simple because I already had the network. I already had the resources. I already had the friends set up. So I was 17. It was my last day of summer vacation before my senior year. Was the last time I got arrested, you know, and just dumb shit, just drinking with friends. Got an underage drinking citation. And, you know, it was that time that I was like, all right, I'm done with that shit. Like, this is going nowhere good. It's going nowhere productive. And so I cleaned it up. And like,
bro, man, cool. 17 must have been the age back then, because we went through that as well. And it was like a competition. Yeah. Say, mischief. We were just, it was just mischief. Like, they call us the good old boys. Like, man, y'all didn't want us in the house. And like, get outside. And we did. And then we would cut up. And increments, man. Those,
you
are
know, my neighborhood. It was just there was like 15 or 20 kids all around the same age. And then, of course, like, it was still during the era, like, before cell phones, before computers. And it was like, you ride your bike around the neighborhood, and then you find the house where all the bikes are in front of the house. Well, that's where everyone is.
Yep.
And then once enough kids do that, and then the parent comes in and they're like, nope, out. Like, I got 20 kids out, get out of my house.
Yeah.
So you hang it outside, and then it's only a matter of time before someone like sneaks a cigarette and someone sneaks a beer, and then it just escalates and you're playing with fire. And for whatever reason, whatever, you know, series of events that occurred, that, you know, the network of friends that I was in, we indulged and got aggressive. You know, so I'm thankful that, like, I was able to get out so young, because, you know, like, New England, like, we got swept with like just this opioid pandemic, and I'm just so grateful, like, man, thank God I got out when I did, because I'm just watching these friends that it was just dumb schoolyard shit.
Yeah.
And then watching them, like, it progress and progress and progress to the point that they're, you know, you're dealing now with real life problems, not just being an inconvenience or getting in trouble, like, here and there, slap on the wrist. You're dealing with like life and death stuff. And now it's like, oof, okay, this is real. So, yeah, that was definitely, you know, I got out when I did. I'm thankful for it. It's definitely, life's a little bit better now. It's a little, not quite as chaotic.
Well, that's relative, right? It depends on
what. Yeah, exactly.
It's the lessons now. That's what I was kind of getting into earlier, man. As you progress, as ages rank, man, the more situations you find yourselves in, the more you find yourselves in. I never thought in a million years me and you would be racing together out in Florida. I mean, that wasn't in – where does that even come from, right?
And then, trying to explain that to that one, like when I'm like talking to my dad or something, I'm like, hey, he's like, oh, where you at? I'm like, I'm in Tampa. Yeah. He's like, oh, what are you doing in Tampa? I'm like, racing a boat?
Who you with? Like, and I was trying to name it. I'm like, man, you're not – I don't even know how they put this stuff together, but they do, so –
Yeah, someone made the mistake of giving us keys to this boat, and it's gonna get reckless.
Oh, so much fun, man! That was a good one. I'm about to thank my wife again for letting me go play on that sucker, man.
Now you broke your back too when you were pretty young. How did that affect your Olympic career and kind of where you're at now?
Yeah, I broke my back in two spots. So that was. I had moved out to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. I was 18 and, I was pursuing my Olympic dream, both my parents were Olympians. I wanted to become an Olympian and I wanted it to become like this, like family tradition that like each generation has an Olympian in it. And,
are there any families like that, that you know of since you come from that world?
I mean, there has to be, right?
Right.
Like, I know there's like father son duos in the NBA and sure. NFL.
Well,
like
that's what I'm talking about, stuff. Right? Like, I wonder if there's a pass down in a family with one of the sports in there. Where it's like, hey, man, this is kind of what we do in this family. It's just, yeah, it's understood.
Yeah, maybe. I think when I was at the training center, I think there was a family in judo.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, it'd be something like that, right?
It was like a giveaway. Like, if you had this last name, it's like,
yeah, you're good.
Yeah,
to
you
go.
Gotta tune up on some fools,
right?
Awesome. But yeah, so I was living in the Olympic Training Center, just like sole focus. 18 years old, like I didn't care about anything else.
What's that world like? What's that like, man? Is that like being in like signing up in the barracks? You get up regimented this morning. You're eating at this time.
No, like there's definitely a little more flexibility than that. Chill. But it was. Basically you could do whatever you wanted as long as it didn't interrupt training. So like I was trying to go to college and I could only take one, maybe two classes a semester because it couldn't interfere with training at all. You had a key card to get everywhere and like they would see like, okay, like you didn't get back to campus. You didn't get back to your dorm until 11 PM. And now you're training this morning. It's shitty. Like they could,
oh, put in like that?
They could make whatever rules. They
oh, right. Yeah. Right. Man.
And so for me, I had nothing else on my plate. Like I was maybe taking like one class at college, like at community college down the road. But all I cared about was training, I was just, training, I was lifting too heavy too often and just didn't know any better, and I had a coach that was pushing me at the time. He was feeling some pressure from whether it was the Olympic Committee or USA Weightlifting to produce and have results. So when an athlete said like, hey coach, my knee hurts, my back hurts, there wasn't much sympathy, there wasn't much accommodation. And it started like, hey coach, my back hurts. And then one day in training, just lifting too heavy too often. And, I was doing a clean pull. So it's basically like a deadlift with a big shrug at the top. And, I hit the bar off my hip and then just this loud, like big pop. And I just like dropped the bar and froze. And it felt like, have you ever had like those heat packs or ice packs, like the big green gel things and you click the little metal thing in it?
Yeah.
And then you could watch it expand through the whole thing. That's what it felt like in my back. Like I felt this big pop and then I felt it like take over my whole back. And, like immediately just stopped at, I don't even know if I went to the doctor. I just like went back up to my dorm and just like didn't show up to practice for a couple of days. Couldn't walk for a couple of days and was like, this is bad. Like something happened. Everything hurts. And I remember telling my coach, like, hey man, like I hurt my back. And he said to me, he was like, there's a difference between pain and injury. And he just assumed that I was just young and being a pussy. You know, I was 18, first time away from home. He figured I was looking for an excuse not to train for a couple of days. And then on top of it, I was on the junior world team and we were leaving for Romania in like a week. And so it was too late to like call in the alternate, you know, even if I was injured, they can't call on someone a week prior to competition. They're not going to be prepared. And so he was basically like, you have to keep training. And so it's like, fuck. Okay. Kept training, like, you know, got back into it, did a couple of days easy. And then the day before leaving, it's like you hit like a heavy back squat. You get that stimulus of a super heavy weight a few days before competition. And so I remember like going for a max out back squat, hit the bottom of the hole, bottom of the squat, go to bounce out of it. And just like exact same pop, but on the other side. And same thing, just like felt it, the swelling just expanding through my whole lower back. And I'm like, fuck, I leave for Romania like tomorrow. And so went to Romania, tried to compete. And I remember like the team coach out there was like, hey man, like, you know, what's your goal for this competition? I was like, I just don't want to bomb out. I want to make at least one lift in the snatch and the clean and jerk numbers. I don't care. I just, my first time on a world stage, I don't want to bomb out. And so anyways, did that, went 2 for 6, you know, terrible fucking performance. and I got back to the States and I just put my foot down. I was like, I'm not lifting a fucking thing until I get an x-ray. Like something's wrong in my back. Something is fucked up. And so anyways, got x-rayed and the doctor was like, oh yeah, here you go. There's a break here and a break here. And I was like, oh, okay. Like it wasn't just in my head. And so, you know, the first like, approach to fixing it is they put me in a torso brace and it was like this hard plastic shell that went from like, from nipple to hip and it sucked. It was fucking hot Colorado summer. And
bro,
like, and it like pinched my hip. Like I couldn't sit vertical. Cause it just like dug into my hip bones. Anytime I sat down, it just pinched. And then you can't train. You're living at the Olympic Training Center. You're watching all your friends, all your competition, everyone training, progressing, competing, hitting PRs, you know, and they're all making these accomplishments. They're qualifying for Pan Ams, qualifying for senior, all these different things. And I have to just fucking sit there and there's nothing I can do. Like there's no rehab I can do to help my bone heal faster. There's no rehab I can do. Like I have to, the best thing to do is leave this thing immobile for 4 months. And, yeah, so I did that. And I remember going in for a 3 month checkup and they're like, yeah, we're going to leave you in the brace for one more month. Stayed in for another month, go back in. I'm all excited. Like I already have my first training session planned out for my first day back, everything. And then the doctor was just like, yep, nothing's changed. Like, I was like, what do you mean nothing? Like, I just did that the most miserable 4 months of my life for fucking nothing. And he was like, yep, you need surgery. And, you know, so that like rocked my world. When you're 18, you don't know any better. You haven't been through anything. But you know, it was tough. Like it was like, I'm watching my lifelong dream just like get stripped away. And then it was like, I just didn't want a fusion. I thought if I got fusion, my life, my career would be over. You know, I'd heard nothing but bad things about it. There was a doctor out in California that he had just signed on with the Olympic Association. Total coincidence that I met this guy. And he was like, oh, I'll fix your back. I give it a 50-50 shot of working though, because of your age. He was like, if you were 12, it'd be a guaranteed fix. And he's like, I did it on a 12-year-old. Perfect. I did the surgery on a 24-year-old, 26-year-old. And we knew it wouldn't work, but we were experimenting. So it didn't work. He's like, you're 19. I give it a 50-50 shot if it works. And so basically what he did, he went in, he re-broke the bones, put in two plates, six bolts to hold everything in place. And then he's like, now we wait. Now we wait to see if this shit heals. And so, I mean, if I thought the first 4 months in the brace was bad, this next few months, I was literally told by the doctor, it's 50-50 and there's nothing you can do to help it. It's just if your body takes it or not. And, but yeah, you know, that healed up, slow fucking road back. I remember going back in and lifting with a broomstick for the first couple sessions. Then I remember lifting with an empty barbell and I'm coming in like, man, I used to snatch 300 pounds. I used to clean and jerk 360. Like I'm lifting with a fucking broomstick. Like, this is brutal,
bro. Talking about that brace, Mojo had my brother Morgan. Man, when he got at that helicopter crash, we snuck him out of the hospital after they had the thing, and we put that brace on him upside down accidentally for like a week. With
oh.
him, you know that curved part, the bottom that's supposed to go up.
And, it goes over your ass.
And he was like, "Man, this hurts so bad." And we're like, "No, you're good, man. Suck it up." And holy shit. I forgot how bad those turtle shells, they're terrible. Man, I was in one of them suckers. Oh.
They suck. And it was kind of funny. So like I have a shipping container that on a property that I just store a bunch of my shit in. And I was in there looking for a piece of equipment the other day with my buddy. And there, the brace is sitting on the
You still
have
shelf, that damn thing, man?
Like, dude, after living in that thing for 4 months and the pain and agony it caused me, I was like, I can never throw this thing away. If I'm ever having a shit day, I'll just look at that thing and it's like, all right.
You're still young. I got plenty of those devices now, man. But let me tell you what else happened. I literally still get out of bed the same way that you had to when we were locked up.
Mm.
Dude, I mean, even if I'm from a dead sleep, I will catch myself doing the whole brace thing, roll over. Man, that thing, that was miserable.
I remember the first couple of weeks. So I left Colorado. I went, got the surgery in California, went back home for like a week or two. And then I moved to Michigan and like, that was where the Olympic Education Center was. So like they require you to take school full time because I was like, man, I just saw my sports career can end like that. And I need to have an education for when I'm done. And I'm living in a dorm room, sharing a dorm room with another guy. And it was like my first couple of weeks, I couldn't sit myself up in bed. It was like my alarm would go off. He would have to get down off the top bunk, basically like hug me and like set me up and turn me. And then I remember like walking to class, I couldn't put a backpack on. Like my back's fucking broken and I'm in this brace. Like I can't carry a backpack. And like Northern Michigan in January.
That's good.
Holy
time, huh?
Shit.
It's cold. Yeah.
And so like, I would bundle up. I'd have to leave for class like 20 minutes early because I would have to like shuffle across campus. And I would just like take like three pieces of paper, put them in my pocket and a pen in the other pocket. And like, I'm sure my teachers thought I was just lazy and like didn't want to bring the book or whatever it was. But I'm like, now this is all I can carry. Just shuffle through this Arctic to get to class. Oh, it was miserable. But like, I wouldn't change that shit for the world.
I was just thinking that whole thing. I was like, you know what? Those moments, you don't ever hear those. Thanks for sharing that, by the way. That because people look at you now and what you've accomplished. I mean, there's been some of those crazy moments on the in-betweens. I don't ever think about them that much either, man, unless we bring it up. And I'm like, I forgot about that part. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's so easy to forget the miserable times, like, and just remember the highlight reel.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I mean, in the moment, like I learned some valuable life lessons there of like, hey, don't rush back from something as simple as don't rush back from an injury. Like your body knows the time it needs. Let your body heal. As soon as you try making up for lost time, you lose more time. But then just like grittiness too of like, yeah, it's not enjoyable. I don't want to be lifting on a empty barbell again. I'm 19 years old and I'm starting from scratch. Like, I'm trying to be an Olympic hopeful right now and I can't even lift my body weight anymore. So that grittiness. But then there's the lessons that I didn't realize were valuable until after the fact. You know, like now bro, there's not much that can derail me. You know, it's like, I look back at how just like sad, depressed, hopeless I was when I was going through that and where I'm at now. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, thank God I hurt my back. Thank God I went through that shit. Thank God my weightlifting career didn't pan out the way I wanted it to, because I would have never found CrossFit. Like, say I had pursued, like after my surgery, I came back from weightlifting. I hit all my old, like I beat all my old PRs, but I had lost love for it because I trained off resentment.
Yeah.
And so like resentment's a good fuel, but it's a hot burning fuel. You can't use it for too long. And so, you know, I walked away from that, but like, if I had made the Olympic team and then I could put like a stamp of completion on that, on my sports career, and then I would have gotten a desk job as an engineer. But because it didn't pan out that way, and like it, I still had this competitive itch, and that's what made me find CrossFit. And I'm like, oh fuck, I wouldn't trade the life I have now for any of that stuff. So anytime like there's a speed bump, I'm like, man, if I got through that shit and like this is the end result of that situation, bring it on, let's go.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of situations and like a couple where some bad shit happened, and it wasn't even like, okay, this is going to be a rough hole to dig myself out of. It was, I don't know if I can dig myself out of this. Yeah. I don't know. It's not, I don't know how to, it's, I don't know if it's possible. And in the moment, I remember just being broken, hopeless, but still thinking, I wonder what good is going to come of this.
Yeah.
I wonder like 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, what silver lining is going to show itself from this situation? You know, the easy example is like heartbreak of like a girlfriend dumps you, and then however long later it is, you meet the person, you're like, oh, you're the one.
Yeah, right.
And it's one of those situations where like, thank God that girl dumped me. Like, right. But like going from that hopelessness to like, oh man, you're now thanking your ex-girlfriend for doing that to you and put you through that miserable time, because now you found the one that you're supposed to be with. You know, that's just the easy example, because I feel like that's the one most people experience.
Sure.
You know, applying that, leveling it up of just like, okay, you know, if I got through that shit prior, bring it on. Like, let's go. Give me the speed bumps. Give me the challenges. Try to derail me.
That's why the age is ranked thing. Because as you go through it in the beginning, that's why it's the beginning. It's one hell of a ride. I mean, it is. And then when you get through it, just like we explained earlier, it's like everyone else just kind of fan. The reason it was chaotic is because there was people there that weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So and when it starts to settle down, then you know who your class is, who's supposed to be around you, and then it becomes clear. You know, most people can't see that. It just figures itself out. It like works itself out.
That was another thing, like, When I was doing weightlifting, and it was like when I was doing well, when I was winning competitions, all this stuff, it was like everyone's there when you're doing well.
Sure.
And like everyone's there to pat you on the ass, and they want to be associated with the winner. But then, you know, when I hurt my back, and it was like people I thought were my friends, I'm like, yo, I need you now more than ever. You know, and you see like who kind of pulls away and then go hitches their wagon to the new flash in the pan. Right. And so, you know, when I came into the sport of CrossFit, it was, I was very much just a solo person. I was like, no, I don't want 100 friends. I don't want this big posse. I want one person with me that I know what they're going to say before they say it. And it's vice versa. You know, like it doesn't matter what they get offered, the grass is not greener on the other side to them. And I held that true all the way through. So all 5 years that I won, I have the same picture after each competition, and we're holding the check. I'm wearing the gold medal, and I got Sammy, my wife on one side, and I got Matt O'Keefe on the other. And it was like, yep. Like if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, bring a group. But I was very, very selective with who that group was, because I was like, I want to sleep well at night. I want to know that they have my best interest and I have theirs. And I don't need to account for 100 people. I don't need to pull favors. It was like, I'm going to be loyal to the people that are loyal to me. Yeah. And that's those two.
100%, man. And then the experiences of going through all that just to solidify it, like hammer it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you know that. That's a time-tested deal. And that's, I think at a young age, and the most of the stuff now, it's crazy when you get kids online, bro. Just wait. Is that all this stuff that we talk about? Right now, it makes sense. When we go back and forth, just when we were sitting around, I was like, man, you know, start talking. And the stuff that you say of how you motivate yourself or what, moreover, what you have to go through, it's kind of what motivates us, because we know how much pressure that is.
Yeah.
And then when it's time for us to pass that down to the next generation, the ones that are coming up, man, the way we deliver it, that's how you know if you pick something up, is if you can teach it to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't know it well enough.
It's not logical. We're talking about, I can, you know, you can say something, like explain something one way and everyone gets it. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, someone else has another way of explaining it to where only a couple people get it. A couple people kind of understand it. A few people don't even have any clue what it is. And that's the one they want to go with. But everyone's like, hey, man, they're, it's not that I'm not explaining it the same way you are. I am. I just explain it this way to where most people and everyone can hear it.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
I'm experiencing that now, like, you know, switching from like being a competitor into the role of being a coach.
Coach, yep.
Yeah. And working with some athletes, and I know I'm a good coach because I didn't pick up on things naturally. I didn't just pick up a barbell and go, boop, I'm an amazing weightlifter. No, it didn't come naturally to me. So like it took someone trying like 20 different things with me to get that one cue. Like something as simple as swimming. It's like swimming didn't come naturally to me. I had to seek out multiple swimming coaches, and all of them were telling me the same information, but one just told it to me in a way that clicked.
Yeah.
And so now when I take an athlete in and I'm working with them, you know, sometimes the first way I explain something, the way that clicked with me is what clicks with them. But then I also know, like, okay, I got another dozen ways of explaining this, or a dozen different drills to do that. Like, yeah, they did nothing for me, but I know them because I tried them all.
Right.
Like none of this came naturally for me.
Yeah. You know,
But trying to find that one thing that just for whatever reason, boom, clicks.
That's the trigger or the trick, right? I was explaining this. I was trying to explain the same concept to somebody else. And the way it got to me was when I started teaching my kid addition. We were going over the nines. It was like 9 + 8, 9 + 7, 9 + 6. And for the longest time, I would use my fingers and try to figure that out until someone was like, all right, so whatever 9 + 7, what's under 7 is a 6. So you put a 1 in front of 16. 9 and 5 is 14, 9, 3, 12. And I didn't, when they told me that, I was like, wait a minute, that's the trick? And they're like, yeah. I was like, there's actually a trick to everything.
Yeah.
But what people don't teach you is that. Like you and I, if we're sitting around, someone's like, hey man, Matt, how did you become great? Well, I get up every morning at 4 and I meditate for 97 hours. And then there's the outline, right? But then there's also your gift. That's what your gift is. And when you realize your gift in your sport or your moment, that's the greatest thing you can get, because especially if you give it to somebody, they're like, man, this is how I figured this out.
So I've always, like, people always want the quick, the punchy, the sexy line of like, what makes you different? What makes you great? Like, why are you winning by this certain amount, whatever it is? And there's so many variables. You're dedicating your life to it. You know, there's no quick, simple thing. But the thing I came up with was like the most valuable thing, and I think it's contributed the most, is learning how to learn. And for me to learn a topic is different than my wife, is different than my friend, is different than my athlete. But me being able to dissect myself and figure out the formula, like, okay, I don't know this. Why don't I know it? What about it, you know, makes me uncomfortable? What about it makes me unfamiliar? And knowing how I best react in my best learning environment and breaking it apart, dissecting it, figuring all these things out individually, and then reapplying them all. You know, I learned that shit in college, and then I apply it to everything. And now it's like, how you do anything is how you do everything. And like how I learned how to do thermodynamics and mechanical engineering applies to me learning how to have proper rowing technique when I'm competing in CrossFit. It's the same as me, you know, learning about investing in real estate, business, all the shit. It's like, well, no, let me break it. Like, I don't know how to do that. And most people, that's where it ends. They just cry, I don't know how to do that. And for me, and like a lot of successful people, it's like, they go, I don't know how to do that. Well, what about it? Don't I know which individual piece? All right, let me break each one of those down, figure that out.
Yeah.
Then put it all back together. Do I know it now? Nope. All right, let's break it up. You know,
know that, so that, yeah. That's right,
that
man.
For me, I look at it as like, that's my trick is the ability to learn, the willingness to learn, the willingness to be a beginner, but learn. Once I learned how to learn, that was a very valuable thing for me.
Well, know thyself, know how you mm-hmm. learn. I think a lot of time, and now that you watch the kids, and when we were in class too, I didn't get like that one size fits all. This is how we're doing this, man. If you could actually explain it every different way to when they understand it, because that's the thing. It's like when you're trying to teach something and they're like, man, I'm not getting that. There is a way to explain it to them. It's like there somehow, yeah. some way, there's some instructions that allows you to communicate like that. And it's brilliant. Yeah, like, and the cool part is the more you do it and the more people you come around, it gives you more ammunition. I mean, damn, bro, you know that yeah. stuff that those crews we've been running around with doing all that fun stuff, man, I'd sit and listen to them talk. And the stuff that comes out of their mouth is hilarity, but I mean, it's knowledge for sure.
I mean, any time I have the opportunity to be with someone that is an expert in their craft. Like I have buddies that are, you know, our careers have nothing in common. Like I have a buddy who's one of the best welders in the world. I have a buddy who's like one of the best table makers, the best snowboarder, like all these different things. And it's like every time we start talking about like our careers, how we got into it, our passions, anything, they're fucking parallels. They're the exact same. It's just we're applying it to a different avenue.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. Like I've talked to some other athletes that our sports have nothing to do with each other, but like the psychological game sure. that they play with yeah. their competitors were identical to the ones that I played. And I remember one specifically, a buddy of mine, he was talking about like him warming up for like a half pipe event and these games that he plays with his competitors, and Sammy is cackling to the side because she's watched me do the exact same thing, but in a CrossFit gym. And she was like, holy shit, you two are two peas in a pod. Just he slides down a hill and you pick things up and put them down.
Right, right.
Like
you're the one that picks things up and builds the hill. He's the one that goes up and slides back down them. Yeah. Right. I mean, bro, when you start putting those crews together, that's how you know that's life. Like, cause each one of you has something to do, and you get out there and like, man, I go do this cause I love to watch them do what they do. And that kind of, mm-hmm. that's where that bond comes in. So yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean it can either be great or dangerous.
Sure.
Like you put a bunch of competitive people together and be like, hey, here's a boat. Who can go the fastest?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, we're all like-minded. We're all competing.
Well, I would imagine that's how everything around us has been built. Hey, bro, like we ain't got nothing to do. Let's get a boat and paddle over there and see what we can build, do, or buy. I mean, go how far back you want. I got countries have been built and fallen over that same. Let's go find something to do.
Matt, I got one more question for you. We usually kind of wrap the podcast up by asking someone what their greatest never quit advice is. But I think I have something that might be more relatable for our audience. And I think it's something you could speak to, which is, how could people manage their nerves when they're on a big stage or when they're faced with a moment of adversity or when they feel like they've got this huge goal that they've got to accomplish? How do you handle yourself?
Oh, man. I mean, this is a good one. I mean, I can talk about this one for a while because I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it of, you know, when someone says, you know, I'm nervous or I'm scared, whatever it is, you know, having an emotion and letting that emotion dictate your actions are two completely different things. Every single event that I did at on a big stage, I threw up like right before going out, you know. So like you're in the warm-up area, you know, 15 minutes before your heat gets called, they call like, all right, heat four, everyone over here. And then they put an ankle timer on you and they put you in corrals like you're like a racehorse. And so you're in the order that you're going to go out on the floor on. And every time we would get in the corrals and my nerves were so crazy that I just started dry heaving until you just hit it. And then,
hit it.
A lot of times competitors would be next to me. Like if it was a rookie, they're watching me and they're like, what the fuck is happening? And I think a lot of times some athletes saw it and they're like, oh, he's nervous. Good, good. And my manager, who had my coaches band every year, he would like, if I didn't throw up, he'd be nervous.
Right.
As soon as he saw me dry heaving, he was good. He's ready. You know, it was just such a normal thing. And I think for some, they have those nerves and they cower away from them. They go back to that place that's comfortable to get rid of those nerves. And for me, I was like, well, no, who gives a shit if I'm scared? Who gives a shit if I'm nervous? Like if I'm insecure, whatever it is, having those emotions dictate your actions are a totally different thing. And not once did I ever cower away. And just knowing the confidence, like, hey, like you're nervous. If you go out there and you're nervous and it takes you 10 minutes of fumbling around, it's going to be the same 10 minutes as if you ran away, you know? So it's like this 10 minutes is going to pass no matter what. So for me, it was like looking at a workout, I'm like, this is going to be an 8-minute workout. This is going to suck. This is going to hurt. At no point in it am I going to be having a good time or like this. So it's like, I can
think about back, that psych out,
half,
right?
I can give a half effort and make this workout last 9 minutes, but it'll hurt a little bit less. But knowing that, all right, 10 minutes after the workout is done, you're going to be fine. Your heart rate's going to be down. You're going to have your breath back. You're going to be getting a sip of water. Everything's going to be good. You can either choose to make yourself proud in that workout, or you can regret it for the rest of your life. And I was fortunate enough to have that laid out in front of me early in my career, where like I chose the instant gratification, the path of, you know, I'll go a little bit easier right now. And I saw the pain and anguish that it caused me, thinking like, what if I just gave it my all for that extra, for that 8 minutes, make it hurt a little bit more. Maybe I wouldn't be disappointed in myself. And so always knowing that, like, for me going into a workout, it was like, all right, this workout's 10 minutes. In 20 minutes, I'm going to feel fine. I'm going to be back to my normal self, enjoying myself, joking around with friends. But I have the choice of if I want to make myself utter be disappointed about the effort that I put forward. So literally, no matter the situation I'm going into, I think about, all right, what do I want to think back on the situation? What do I want my emotions to be on the situation tomorrow, in a year, in 10 years? Do I want to be proud of the effort I gave, or do I want to just take the instant gratification and kind of, you know, not give it my all?
That's amazing. Cause sometimes, I mean, there are some things I got into, man, or training that we did when we were young that we do all the time now. And it's like so much a part of our life that you don't even notice it. It's like, there's some things that you can get good at and you can get proficient at. Some things that happens immediately. And then sometimes it takes practice to where, I mean, just to get that repetitive thing going. I tell my kids 2 weeks. I'm like, man, you want something, wait 2 weeks. If you still want it, I'll get it for you.
Yes.
And then
I learned that about myself.
Yeah, yep. I'm the same way. Let me go screw this up for a while, play with it for a little bit, and then I'll get back to you. If we still mm-hmm. want to go. And then that's also about the time when when we were hurt, right? And you're trying to come back in out of that, and that after 2 weeks, that's when your body gets the weakest. It's like when you think you look the most out of shape. And that's almost life and your body saying, hey, man, we do this for a living. You sure you want to do this? And then if you just go that extra day, it's like, yeah, all right, now you're in it. And someone will usually recognize it. They'll be like, hey, man, you know, have you been doing this? And then that perpetuates the body. I've always heard that, or you hear it a lot, like mind, body, and spirit, mind, body, and spirit. There's some people born into this world, they're body people. Like, what gym do you go to? What martial art do you train? And why? I was like, well, man, it talks to my body in this way. I'm like, all right, well, why the, there's the mind people. Like, why do you educate yourself in that building? Why those books? Because we're all different. And then with the spirit, why that church? Why this, that, and the other? I mean, if you're so involved with your mind, if you work on all those other two, you can't even believe when you put all three of them together. Most people go through their lives doing the one or the two. Very rarely do people put a bunch of effort into all three. Like guys like us, man, we get into something and we wholeheartedly just whoa, until we get it so good that all those others learn automatically.
Yeah, you know, I think that's kind of like it kind of for me. I know it goes back to like how you do anything is how you do everything. You know, like rarely do you meet someone that takes care of themselves physically, but they're showing up late to work.
Or right, yeah,
you know, they're not putting effort into their relationship or whatever it is. And so it's like when you meet somebody that's successful in business, and then you're like, oh man, you have the greatest relationship with your wife. You're great with your kids. You know, like your business is thriving. You're smart. Like you're amazing. How you do anything is how you do everything. It's not that that person just like everything they touch happens to turn to gold. It's that, oh, I like for me, no, I work hard in the gym, but that also means when I was in college, I worked hard there. When I had a job, I worked hard there. When I with my wife, I work hard there, you know? So it's just making sure I'm trying to be the best at everything. And all that is just a result of working my ass off at anything that I decide, like this is of value to me. So I'm going to apply effort there. And I remember having those friends growing up, where you're like, man, everything you touch turns gold. And it's like, no, they just work at everything.
Yeah. I work so hard, I dig all the crap out around it, and the gold was already there. That kind of thing, man. It's just, for sure.
You've got a brand new book coming out this new year. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, that was kind of like my first project in retirement. You know, I knew I wanted to take on some projects. I was stepping away from competition. And I was like, all right, I got to have some ducks in a row, things to like occupy my mind, because we're going to have a lot more free time. And so, you know, the book was kind of like one of the obvious choices. And it was so many things that I've wanted to say. You know, rarely do you meet someone that's good at something and they don't enjoy talking about it. But for me, it was my competitive edge that I had figured things out and I didn't talk about it. I didn't want to help my competition. I didn't want to, you know, give them an advantage of like the knowledge that I picked up over the years. And so this book is literally just a book about that, of like these little things of how I approached different styles of training when I was bad at something. How did I get better at it for competing? You know, these little tiny things in competition that a lot of competitors never pick up on. They walk out on the floor and they're like, okay, I need to go as hard and as long as I can. And for me, I'm looking at, all right, how can I be as efficient as possible? Where can I gain a second in this 10 round workout? So, you know, it goes into basically everything in my competition career of, you know, what I ate, how I structured my life, the training I did, how I competed, how I looked at competition, how I worked on weaknesses. And it's just kind of all the things that I've wanted to talk about through my whole competitive career, but it would have been a big disadvantage to me if I gave my competitors my playbook. So as soon as I stepped away from the competition floor, I was like, all right, here we go. Like, you guys want to know the secrets? Here's what I did.
Yeah.
It comes out, you know, it's on pre-order right now, but it gets released January 11th.
I'm sure mine's already here somewhere, Melanie. One of you guys probably already.
They're going to send it to us.
Where it's signed.
They just reached out to us.
Just making sure.
You'll be getting your copy.
You know, hey, bro. Yeah. That's awesome.
HWPO.
Hey, man, we're going to take care of you for sure.
Is that the name of the book?
Yeah. Yeah. HWPO.
I always like, man, you said something earlier, kind of hit me. When we were growing up, when they had the cross training, like the athletes, Gen X, you know, like everything that we do is cross trained into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I was talking to some of my buddies, and when they were saying, you know, when we get out, you know, going into being the family life is kind of difficult. I was like, well, we don't ever get out. It's like everything we learn, we just keep adding on to it.
Yeah.
Like we're
applying it to
whatever we do. Thing. Yeah. Being a husband, why, you know, being that, doing no matter what we do, everything is everything, right? Anything is everything. So it's like kind of what do you put into it? And a lot of times, man, just take those. It's a step-by-step process. It's not everyone can look at what you've got in front of you and be like, man, how in the hell do you do that? And but yeah, it's like, man, this just didn't happen in a second. It took a this took some time.
Yeah, I forget who it was, but they said it took me 17 years, 3 months, and 2 days to become an overnight success.
Yeah.
And, man, you know, that's how I looked at my CrossFit career of, you know, like in relative terms, I came on to the scene very quickly. But it's like the reason I was able to come on the scene very quickly is because I had a 10-year Olympic weightlifting career that allowed me to hit the ground running now. I wouldn't have had this, like, if you want to call it instant success in the space, if it wasn't for that 10 years of training every single day. And then I came into space. And then even after that, it was still 3 years till I won my first world championships. And, you know, it's a lot of hours. And it's not every day that you're in the gym with a group. It's not every day that a camera's on you making a highlight reel. I'm in my basement alone. I'm in my garage alone, just hammering my head against the wall, trying to figure this shit out.
Yeah, man, if people had to watch that, I don't think they'd probably hate it. That's the grind part. It's that instant gratification you were talking about. I was like, hey, man, let's see. Look how good that's what they like watching.
I remember, like, when I was still competing, you know, people asked, like, are you gonna release your training once you're done? And I was like, honest to God, I don't know, because I don't think people would want to do it. It's not the sexy stuff. It's not the stuff you've seen on the competition floor of, you know, transitions and all. I'm like, it's all single modality. It's so much technique work. It's so much just removing as many variables as I can to give a full effort on this one singular task. And that's it. And then do that shit 10 times a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And then after 50 weeks, you get 3 days in front of a crowd to cheer for you.
Yeah. No, that's not where if it was just that, it wouldn't be worth it. It's like, man, we actually like that grind part that you're talking about. Those moments where it's repetitive cycles, just, and then the applying it in there and letting everyone see it is that's a reward.
Yeah,
too, though,
like,
man,
yeah, like, sure. If you just showed up and applied zero effort to something and then found out you're incredible at it, yeah, you might you don't value it the same, because you didn't invest anything into it. It's when you have this reward at the end of a just grueling day. That's where the sweetness is.
Oh, for sure, man.
Matt, thanks so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us, man.
Absolutely.
Hey, what can our listeners do to support you guys? Support you and what you got going on?
Right now, you know, my biggest communication is just Instagram. Matthew Fraz, Matthew with one T, Fras. But yeah. That's it.
We'll do it, man. We'll get that book. We'll push all that stuff for you, bro. It's good seeing you, man. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. So glad we finally got this to line up.
Thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. If you like today's episode, if you think it will help someone in your life, make sure to share it with them. You can download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast. If your friend asks you, what is a podcast and where do I get it? Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere you could possibly think of, the podcast is there. Until next week, never quit.